I'm always struck by the originality of your programming between the two of you. You have a long history of coming up with these wonderful programs, wonderful albums. And I'm wondering, what is your collaborative process? I mean, how do you come up with your ideas as a team? And can you talk about the genesis of Troika in particular?
The most important distinction, I think, about Troika is that while our previous project, Shuffle Play Listen, was born of our mutual diversity of tastes and breadth of taste, Troika does straddle several genres, you know, popular and classical in the Russian milieu, but it more importantly addresses the idea of our playing three separate generations of Russian music written under exile or protest.
We really just follow our passions. I mean, we've been wanting to play Russian music for a long time. We've been playing, you know, Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Rachmaninoff in concert, slipping it into our Shuffle Play Listen sets for a long time, and then we kind of got sidetracked when we discovered it was such a revelation to discover the Beethoven on period instruments and sort of the origin of this combination of cello and piano. So now with Troika, in a way, we're returning to to music that we've been passionate and thinking about for years.
And as far as the process goes, I've been responsible for doing a lot of the arranging, but even from the get-go, I would put the bones of an arrangement up, and then Matt would take over, making it absolutely unplayable by anyone else but himself.
So now I've
really given up, and you know, you'll see all of the arrangements mutually credited on this new record.
Yeah. Are you publishing those arrangements, out of curiosity?
One day we hope to. We get asked by cellists, especially cellists, for this repertoire. They want to play it. So yeah. We will have to do it at some point. But it's hard. It's the legal process is very hard with these things to get the rights.
Right. I like how talking about the Troika of the classical composers, Russian composers, how you've mixed their sonatas with a well-known piece, and in the case of the Shostakovich waltz, a really witty, hilarious arrangement there. I mean, I know that there's a lot of sarcasm, but I listened to it this morning, and it just made me laugh.
Yes.
Hearing
me too.
That.
Yeah.
Were you imagining Kellyanne Conway dancing with Kislyak in the Oval Office? Is that what made you laugh?
Well, I had just flipped through the program book at that point and saw that mural of Trump and Putin kissing each other, so that kind of set the tone. But it sets the tone for the whole album. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to this idea of pairing popular works. You've got the waltz of Shostakovich, the Troika of Prokofiev, and of course the vocalese, which everybody knows from Rachmaninoff. And they're serving as sort of the overture, the introduction to the more serious cello sonatas. And where did that idea come from, and how does it play out in the course of this recording?
Well, even in the sonatas, I mean, Prokofiev had to go through several committees to get approved for his music. So, they couldn't perhaps get as serious as they wanted. I mean, they had to make it in some way palatable to these cultural committees of the Soviet Union and make it music for the people. So those are the issues that they're dealing with. And in fact, with Prokofiev, with the music from Lieutenant KJ, I mean, that's
another film project. I mean, as the Shostakovich ended up in Eyes Wide Shut, Lieutenant KJ was originally a feature film that I think Prokofiev was lured back from his Parisian residency to come back to the...
He was in exile. Yeah. He was in exile in Paris, and this popular project brought him back.
Thank you.
You put the vocalese after the Rachmaninoff sonata. I may be reading too much into it, but was there a reason for putting that at the end of that little collection there? Did you just not want to start the second CD with the vocalese, or
it's really sort of an afterglow piece, don't you think? I think both the short other pieces of Shostakovich and Prokofiev have a nice overture type of, you know, prelude feel, and I think the vocalese really has a meditative and very serene feeling that is that I think is kind of a final stamp on that side of the repertoire of Rachmaninoff.
Matt, maybe you can address the different ways that Shostakovich and Prokofiev and Rachmaninoff approach the cello. Do they write similarly for the instrument, or is there a big difference?
There's a difference. I mean, Prokofiev was really working closely, I think, with Rostropovich. So you have some passage work that I'm sure Slava had a say in, and he was really writing for Slava. I mean, with Rachmaninoff, I mean it's a piano concerto, really, and I'm the orchestra. But he writes very lyrically for the cello, but he also makes sure that, you know, the cello never steals the attention away from what's going on in the piano, which is pretty epic.
Let's talk about the more modern composers. You have a kind of a troika of protest rock songs here. And maybe we'll start with Victor Tsoi and tell us about Kukushka, which I read in the program notes a story, I believe, Matt, about you selecting that particular song.
Yeah, that's right. I had my six-year-old daughter on my lap. Chris had sent me a dozen or so Russian tunes to listen to. I wasn't that familiar with Russian pop music. And we went through and we got to the Victor Tsoi song, to Kukushka. And my daughter, in her Quebecois, just kept saying, encore, encore. Play it again, play it again. And we listened to it, you know, 10, 20 times. And finally, I got to go. I can't listen to it again. But I called Chris and I said, I think we have our hit, at least for the seven-year-old market.
The arrangement is, listening to it, is so different from the song. Of course, the difference being that there are no words in your arrangement, but it seems to be a little more romantic, a little more melancholy, a little more in tune with the vocalese that came before it. Is that a fair assessment? Did you have that in mind?
I think we were also similarly inspired in Kukushka by not only the original, but it's become the most often covered song by Russian pop artists. So I think there were a couple of performances that Matt listened to that I sent to him that also played very prominently in our concept.
Talk about the Pussy Riot. What led you to select that? I assume because of the, you know, the protest nature of the band and their relevance today.
Well, I mean, as we embarked on this recording project, world events started to sort of, you know, become very current, and just the subject of you know, Russian collusion in the election,
right. And. So you started in November of 2016, right?
No. I started long before that, actually.
Yeah.
But it took on a certain urgency once, you know, when Russia got on the news, and that the story of Pussy Riot, and I mean it's really not that different than the story of Shostakovich and Prokofiev and the idea of repression, of freedom of speech, of getting your voice heard and getting just having that ability to express yourself. And with Pussy Riot, it was even more extreme, of course. I mean, they were imprisoned, and So it was not easy to find a tune. Chris kind of put that one in my lap. It was not easy to find a tune that would translate for cello and piano. There's not a lot of lyrical moments in their music that we found, but this particular song works beautifully and has the sort of Russian Orthodox chorale to it, that kind of a rondo form that comes back, and so that works perfectly for the two of us.
We've discovered that in Garry Kasparov's book Winter Is Coming, that this was indeed the song for which Pussy Riot was imprisoned. Mm-hmm. And one of the members subsequently killed. So that really sort of brought it home. Yeah, and the Russian Orthodox aspect of the piece, you know, gave us a foot in the door, aside from, you know, screaming and thrashing that right. We could address in our own way.
How do you approach doing a transcription of these types of works? I mean, I don't imagine you can walk down to the local sheet music store and pick up some Pussy Riot. I mean, what was your process?
Well, I usually start the ball rolling, and for me, it's usually some thread that we establish as something comfortable that might work with cello and piano, and from there, it's a matter of finding the right texture and something that will let it take flight. It's really a nice sense of discovery. When you're sort of halfway through the process and you're, you know, as sculptors have said, you know, you're just kind of chipping away at everything that isn't the piece. There's a piece already in there.
Just quickly, how does John Lennon fit into this formulation for you?
Well, I'm back to the USSR. I think we sort of had to go there, and the lyrics are just as relevant today as they were when they penned them. So this is it's just a fun addition to the whole set.
And Matt really nails the guitar solo, so there was that.
I'll take any guitar solo.
Well, the album is called Troika, from cellist Matt Heimovitz and pianist Christopher O'Reilly. Gentlemen, congrats on this collaboration. It's really a wonderful, thought-provoking album. And I want to thank you for joining us today here on FM 91.
Thank you, Brad. Nice talking with you.
Great to be with you, Brad.